Welcome to Paul Don Power, Power System Design's podcast on power and power design. I'm your host, Alex Pault, and today we've got Steve Miller. He's the Vice President of Technology at SL Power, and we're going to talk about medical power and medical power systems. So hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Alex. Thanks for letting us at SL Power talk to you about medical power systems.
Well, power is really important, and obviously medical power is even more important because it involves people. Is that the only definition between medical power? I mean, obviously there's regulatory issues, but it's all just tied into the fact that it deals with people, right?
That's right, Alex. Since the 1980s, SL Power has delivered millions of power supplies to medical device manufacturers for our Condor DC Power and Alt subsidiaries. We see similarities and contrast between the regular power supply market and the medical market, and I think as we go through and talk about that today, we'll highlight some of those and try to deal with some of the issues that might help a medical device designer.
Well, let's talk about the first big differentiator. One is obviously life-critical systems.
That's right. In the case of a medical device, it might just be analyzing something in the lab, but it could also be providing every pulse and every breath the patient takes. The medical power system may be dealing with lots of data and information, or it may be providing displays of information to the surgeons or the clinicians. It could also be driving a laser, a pump, a compressor. Lots of things that are the same, but lots of things that are different than a regular communications type supply.
Mm-hmm. And so then, where do you see the big issues?
Well, I think one of the big issues is the advance over the past 25 years of the industry in power supplies hasn't been at the same rate the digital devices have advanced.
Oh, yeah, you could say that again.
We've driven the efficiency from around 70% up towards 90% in lots of medical power systems. But we shrunk the size at an even higher rate. So as you can imagine, if the efficiency goes up at one rate and the size drops at a faster rate, the difference is the device is going to run hotter.
Yes, sir.
As compared to maybe 25 years ago, we would almost always see a fan in any power supply of reasonably medium to high power, like 150 watts on up. If I go back to when I first started in this business 30 years ago, we'd have a 300-watt linear power supply with no fan. The thing would be gigantic. I mean, it'd be the size of a desk drawer,
It'd be huge. Huge. Well, but the other side of the coin is that as you shrink, there are always going to be trade-offs involved because power management is thermal management in a lot of senses.
Exactly. And while we do a better job today of packing things into the power supply and bringing heat out to the surfaces and, kind of giving the customer a path where they can get rid of the heat. At the end of the day, it usually takes some air moving through there. And the fan or the cooling system is often, relying upon mechanical parts as opposed to electronic parts. So more prone to break down or have, jam ups or other kind of problems.
Well, exactly. Anytime you involve moving parts in a system, you start introducing potential problems, to put it lightly.
That's right.
Now, aside from that, we obviously we've got a regulatory environment because there are humans involved, and there's obviously almost a race to see how small can we make the device to make it a pain in the butt for the power engineer, because it's getting to the point now, some of these devices, the power system's the largest subsystem inside the package.
It's funny you mention that. Rumor has it that once upon a time, Steve Jobs looked in some successive generations of Apple desktops when they still made such things. And he was, remarked that our team's done a good job shrinking the CPU and the storage and the display. But he noticed that between two different generation systems, there's a big, shiny silver box in the back, and that hadn't changed one bit. Obviously, that was the power supply.
Exactly.
But in defense of the poor old power supply, the loads, the devices, require lots more energy than they used to. As a matter of fact, you probably have as much energy consumed in microprocessors in a handheld device as you used to have in a big desktop PC at any given instant.
Mainframe, when you think about some of the issues in some of the older machines.
That's right. Another significant difference in the medical device is, as you mentioned earlier, you want to keep the patient alive, you want to keep them healthy, you want to let them finish the procedure. Nothing worse than going halfway into it, having to stop, back up, and come back again at some later date. So the medical power systems very often include batteries. And the batteries are there not just to make it portable or simple, but they provide substantial amounts of power. We've been involved with systems where the batteries actually provide kilowatts of power for many minutes, even as much as an hour.
Is that a power quality issue to the medical device, or is it purely for ride-through?
It's power quality, because the hospital may have a generator system. It might be something where it's in a doctor's office where he doesn't have that backup. Now, regardless of the environment, the designers of medical devices want to give the greatest possibility of letting the doctor complete whatever he's doing. Some things are actually dangerous, like an X-ray or something like that. It could be dangerous to come back and have to expose the patient a second time.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
Yeah, if there's any possible way to get through the procedure beyond just comfort, there's actually safety, and obviously in life support devices is extensive. Means are taken by the device designer to make sure the device is reliable and that they can complete the procedure or have time to switch over. You may not have no battery storage for 8 or 12-hour operation, but you definitely want to know what the health trend is in the power system, and that you've got enough to have a reasonable amount of time to switch over if necessary.
So now, Sammy, with all of that, what would you say are some of the big issues for the design engineer who's actually specifying or designing in the power supply into their medical system?
Well, I think the medical safety standards will drive them to do certain construction things. Their own common sense and their practice of their corporation will force them to make the device as safe as possible, but they need some help. And the power supply is the main isolation away from the AC line. Tiny currents at 60 hertz can cause tissue damage or even cause the heart to go into arrhythmia or fibrillation, as little as 10 or 15 microamps if it's applied directly to the patient. Power supplies and systems need to be constructed with higher quality materials and isolation techniques that absolutely assure the minimum risk of the line current getting over to the patient.
Well, there you go, Steve. Now, obviously, you've got products that will help the engineer. What do you have at the top of your mind that you would point out as something that you've got that helps the engineer solve some of these issues?
Well, we actually make a whole line of power supplies from as low as a couple of watts up to thousands of watts. People can find on our website that they're kind of sized for different applications. And you find quite often nowadays, as opposed to in the past, a single output voltage, because a medical system designer has done just like laptops do. Your laptop runs off one single voltage coming in the back, but mini voltage is used inside. So DC to DCs and special chip regulators put on the board and stuff all work their way into medical systems.
Mm-hmm. Now, Steve, what about, obviously, medical systems, they strike me as something that would definitely benefit from a digital distributed power architecture and all. What's going on in that space with the various digital protocols?
Well, to some degree, the medical side is behind where our friends over in the communication side are. If we look at, a server farm or maybe just a server room in a business, you quite often see that the power devices, not just maybe the AC-DC power supply, but even DC-DC and UPS, would have some communication channels available that would provide the operator of the server to know what pending health problems are coming up with this system. Is it getting too hot? Is it drawing too much current? Is one particular device having a cooling issue? So they can go in and isolate that. In the medical systems, to date, there's typically just been very small signals to tell you the AC is about to fail. There's no real time to do much about that other than switching the batteries, or perhaps some kind of DC power good. And if the DC power is not good anymore, the system designer has no choice but to just shut down. And that's too late to really be of any benefit. So to your original question about what's being done, you'll find medical systems that had serial and parallel communications through custom interfaces going back 20, 25 years. But it hasn't been common. If we want to help the device manufacturers make the safest product that they can possibly make, we need to provide them additional information.
Mm-hmm.
So a good example of this is if the system is starting to run a little hot, or maybe the load is starting to draw too much current, maybe a compressor motor is starting to wear out or bearings are starting to seize. You can know about that a long time, perhaps, before it actually went into hard failure. If you knew things like the current or the temperature or the power, or fluctuations in the voltage, any of those kind of things.
Right. Well, and the new communication protocols like PMBus and all give you that information through the back end of the system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. PMBus provides a whole range of health things as well as a diagnostic tree and a methodology to walk down through what's wrong. Not only might tell you that there's a power fault, they could tell you it's a warning and let you go and actually read the power back from the device so they know how much. So if you knew what your system normally pulled, and for whatever reason in this application or during this procedure, it was pulling 15 or 20% more power, well, that could be a yellow flag or even could be a red flag telling you that your system's not going to be able to keep going. And you come back and tell the user that either there's an issue coming or maybe they can modify the way they're using the device.
Well, there you go. So, now, Steve, having said all of that, is there anything that you wanted to touch on before we closed out the episode, or you just want to tell us some of the websites that our audience can go to get some more information?
Well, I think, you know, as we continue to evolve power, and power perhaps catches up to where some other things are, and we provide some deeper and better information, system designers are going to be able to design power systems that have enough intelligence to let them diagnose problems, not just help their field service people, you know, make a shorter field call, but to actually, during the procedure, let them be able to adjust or modify the way the device is operating. Maybe they have some additional cooling. Maybe they have some, you know, auxiliary things that can be turned off that let them get through this, whatever's causing the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned earlier, the regulatory agencies are coming around, both internationally and North American, to just going, every time we develop a new generation of equipment, we learn new things, we apply those new things, the standards catch up, the devices catch up to the standards, so it's just a cycle that we're going through.
Of course. But hopefully we'll get more and more people participating and keep those standards in. I mean, because the other side of the coin is you don't want the standards to start drifting away from what you actually want to get accomplished.
That's right. That's right. As far as more information on digital communication, obviously, you know, people have medical device manufacturers have lots of experience with communications. They can use SPI or ITC or CAN or any number of things. But if you want more information on PMBus, you can go to, you know, www.pmbus.org. And the association maintains the standard. They maintain the underlying protocol. And PMBus is a registered trademark of System Management Interface Forum, which also maintains SMBus, which medical device manufacturers are probably more familiar with, because that's been the backbone of a lot of battery health and gas gauge type devices for, you know, decades.
Well, excellent. And what about your site?
Well, we're slpower.com. And for medical devices, we have a separate section, so you can go to our website and pull down the different medical devices, a few application notes there. At this point in time, the digital communications are in custom power supplies. You will see that move on down into the chain very shortly. And we are a member of the PMBus.org Alliance, so we feel very strongly and passionately about, you know, giving the customers a better tool to make a better system. Because as we all get older, we know sooner or later we're going to need those devices, and I, for one, hope that they're working correctly.
That's an excellent point, Steve. Well, hey, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. Medical power supplies are such a critical space. As you point out, if not just as a market, but we may need them ourselves one day.
That's right. Thank you very much, Alex.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. The pleasure's mine. And I'd like to thank everybody else out there for taking the time to listen to us. We wouldn't exist without you as an audience. Tell your friends about us. This is Alex Pault for Pault on Power. Have a great day.